You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. I'm your host, Bill Kite, and today we're privileged to have two people from what we call CVEPA, which is the Crystal Valley Environmental Protection Association. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
Greg Albrecht used to be the director here at the station, and then Bill Yoakum. Bill, how you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So glad to have you guys on here. It's friends among friends, and we're going to talk about what CVEPA does. So the very first thing, if you could, Greg, kind of tell us a little bit about what Crystal Valley Environmental Protection Association does.
Well, in general, we are a watchdog agency, and we are protecting and stewarding the water of the Crystal River Valley, the more than human of the Crystal River Valley, the human of the Crystal River Valley, we actually had a strategic meeting led pro bono by Rob Stein, a retired RE1 superintendent. Rob's doing consulting work right now in strategic planning, and one of my favorite things about CVEPA is this is a 52-year-old organization that has been board-driven. We have no staff. We're not a fundraising organization. We are a watchdog organization, and it's executed by the board members and the members of CVEPA when we mobilize them. And that especially was expressed as a high priority to one of our younger board members, Tate Anderson, that we're not constantly on the fundraising. We're a grassroots, boots on the ground, residents of the Crystal River Valley protecting its environment. And I think what really gives some insight into what we're all about is our history, which I have the privilege of being a new member of, on CVEPA with Bill Yoakum's coming back on the board, having been one of its founding members 52 years ago.
And absolutely, yeah.
Bill speaks much better than I do to that watchdog history.
Well, let's just get right into that then, Bill, because I know for a fact there's so many people out there who do not know about the Marble Ski Area fight that you guys led, pretty much came out of nowhere and really were successful in. So could you tell us a little bit about that history?
I moved to Redstone in 71, and early on heard about this. I was attracted to the valley by its remoteness and quiet place, and then soon I heard, well, there's to be a 20,000 population town up here at Marble, and became quite alarmed and got together with at that time J. E. DeVilbiss was a lawyer in Glenwood, but he was tight with the many of the Marble residents, and many of them were quite alarmed too. So DeVilbiss was the guy who wrote the charter for the CVEPA, Crystal Valley Environmental Protection Association. And another thing he did was reincorporate the town of Marble. Marble had been formed a turn of the last century and then had allowed its charter to be dissolved sometime in the 30s. But DeVilbiss got Marble as reincorporated for its voice in the matter. And then we would go over to Gunnison County, which seemingly was just handing out approvals for anything asked for by the developers, who had tied up a fair amount of real estate east and west of Marble along the valley. And we would go down to Gunnison to those commissioners and state our objections. There would be an equal number or perhaps more supporters who would show up and talk about their great prospects that this would give to the community. So we battled that out for probably a couple of years and got absolutely nowhere with the county commissioners. They were totally in favor of a 20,000 population development up that county road off of Highway 133. But eventually, the developers made a mistake which was quite helpful and to the opponents, and that was they started selling lots to people without getting releases of an underlying deed of trust to the benefit of Gus Darien. And so these lot owners would pay a down payment to Marble Ski Area. They would get a loan from a bank that Marble Ski Area had arranged for them. And then along came Gus Darien and foreclosed the lot, took the lot away by foreclosure, and yet they still owed on the bank loan. So this we took this situation to the Colorado Real Estate Commission, and they were so alarmed by this this level of fraud, essentially, that they canceled, they forbid the developer from selling any more lots. So at that point, they were dependent entirely on their lot sales to keep going forward. So they went broke and bankrupt, and so that was the end of the ski area. But Savepa lived on, and
right,
and felt somewhat good about what we had accomplished. And so, really, the next target was the dams that were proposed. There was a dam that was going to flood Redstone called the Osgood Reservoir that would back up water, clear up to Placida to the foot of another dam called the that would impound the Placida Reservoir, which would back up water halfway to Marble. And so we had a board member named Greg Durrett, and
right.
he successfully got himself appointed to the board of directors of the West Divide Water Conservancy District, which was the owner, the applicant for these water rights. And he dutifully went to 19 years of their meetings, always being the the sole no vote on on that. And so, but Savepa put up a fight on that. And then the next thing I was really involved in was in 1992 when the coal mine at Redstone, when Mid-Continent shut down, and right. again it went bankrupt, then Savepa, in particular Mike Machow, Chuck Downey, and I and John Stickney, we were involved in an effort to try and persuade both the federal and state agencies in charge of mine land reclamation to do their jobs. This was difficult because there were not adequate bonds to Mid-Continent had been able to put up its own property in Carbondale, its loading dock, as security for the cleanup. Well, that didn't work out well, and there wasn't enough money. So we had to persuade these agencies to come up with their own money to get the cleanup, and I think a pretty successful job was done. And then, what Savepa has always done is just keep watch on what's going on and try to fight directly with the perpetrator, but so often that's useless, and then figure out who you can go to actually get some action brought, some pressure to bear on the ski area, on the coal mine, and later on the proposed dam developers. I left the board about 2008 to get involved in something else, Pitkin County Healthy Rivers and Streams. So there was a long gap there of my attendance, but it certainly carried on, and Greg can tell us it's more current activities.
Right. You know, that's pretty good to have three successes like that under your belt that are very important. Do you really feel like that, Greg, those damn proposals are dead now, or could they come back to life?
Well, these days, never say never, right?
Right.
Man.
That's true.
It's incumbent upon all of us to be vigilant around not just thinking everything's going to necessarily be okay. I don't think we need to be hyper-paranoid, but we obviously these days need to keep our eye on things always, especially in the realm of public land, for land's sake.
For land's sake, exactly. Yeah, for sure.
That history and that detail, it's just lays the foundation and the legacy for how honored and privileged I feel to be on this board, especially, you know, not just Bill, but the many other historical board members and the work they put in. I miss Gregory Durrett all the time. He was a mentor to me in terms of community involvement. And
right.
That's yet another example of established older people in this valley that have done some really incredible things and laid the groundwork for this organization, even to the point of even reciprocally now other organizations ask SAVEPA's for SAVEPA's letters or endorsement as it pertains to Crystal Valley things. But your question is really fortuitous, and I'm guessing even intentional, that one of the things that we're very much watchdogging and advocating for is a wild and scenic designation for the Crystal River and the parameters and the length of which is proposed for wild and scenic.
I'm glad you brought that up. That was one of the things I wanted to get into as well. And how exactly is that support going now? I mean, what kind of report can you give us on progress of it?
Frustratingly slow, but I don't think it's just pie in the sky. It feels like the momentum now for the designation is greater than ever in terms of support. There's been a humongous committee that was formed 2 years ago with numerous stakeholders and participants, including representatives from congressional offices on that committee. That funding ran its course, and it's now divided up into several committees on wild and scenic being a priority, yes, on protecting, but other committees that are also taking hard looks at other ways of protecting a stream, inter-county agreements, et cetera. But really, all of those other agreements go on across the nation, and they ultimately do well and bode well and bolster an ultimate wild and scenic agreement, which is, again, what SAVEPA would prefer to see. The backleg is that federal congressional representatives need to know that the entire, pretty much it feels like they're looking for 100% community approval.
Yeah.
Not even necessarily involvement, but a few naysayers can make enough, and there are a handful right now. So anyway, Hickenlooper and Senator Bennett and Hurd need to have a high confidence level to bring this up as a bill, as a designation. But all that said, I mean, protection of water is the first and foremost thing that a wild and scenic designation does, and not diverting, not damming, et cetera. And that's the basics of a wild and scenic designation. On that note, that's been brought up in these committees, the baseline of a wild and scenic designation can be, have addenda that can name numerous protections of private property and other in-stream flow private property rights. So those that are afraid of that aspect can be accommodated.
Right, for sure. And, you know, there, in our neck of the woods, there are two rivers that really deserve that designation. Deep Creek is one of them,
mm-hmm.
and then the Crystal. So, yeah, that would pretty much put to bed any kind of proposal for dams, would it not?
Yes, and diversions. Who knows in the future, the North Fork of the Crystal, the upper North Fork of the Crystal could pretty conveniently be diverted to over Favored or Halsey or pass to the other side of Gunnison County. And I would think that anybody would want to make sure we protect that from ever happening if the water were purchased or something of that nature. To be clear, SVPA endorses all the protections of the Crystal River Valley, and our preferred ultimate result would be a wild and scenic designation of the Crystal River on the span that is being proposed. And on that note, Bill coming back to the board and his involvement with Pitkin County Healthy Rivers, we redid our mission statement, I think in March, and Bill was adamant and all of us were on board about including water as part of our mission statement.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host, and today we're fortunate to have folks from SVPA, Crystal Valley Environmental Protection Association, Bill Yoakum and Greg Albrecht. The thing is about fights like you talked about, Bill, is people can make a difference. And in case you're out there wondering, you know, what can I do, you could join SVPA. I've got to pay my dues here. I've been remiss. But get on the website. It shows you how to do that. And that would help a whole lot because these things, a lot of times, they get a life of their own and they disappear for a while and then they come back. And that's what I think everyone's afraid of, because when you let your guard down, that's when people come in and start nibbling enough that they finally get a big hold on what they'd like to do, regardless of what the public would like to do. And you have the public pretty much behind you, and a lot of these things, they wouldn't happen. Isn't that correct, Bill? I mean, you got people stirred up to where nobody wants to flood Redstone or have two dams like that in the valley.
Of course, nobody wanted that. And oddly, the West Divide and the River District, which became their partner, they had to go to court every 6 years to establish diligence that they were proceeding with reasonable speed to complete these projects. They did that for 50-some years. And every time they went to court, they had to assert to the judge that they had to pass the can and will test, meaning we intend to do it, and we will have the ability to do it. And yet at the same time, they're telling us in Redstone, oh, we would never flood Redstone. So we're always wondering, aren't they more interested in telling the truth to the judge than they are to us? But by the way, what they did, of course, as part of litigation that SVPA was a party to, was abandon the rights to build those reservoirs. They have still held on to the storage rights that went with them, but promised not to use them in the Crystal River Valley. But Bill, you're right that somebody could pick up the old plans for the Placida Reservoir tomorrow and put new names on it and go file it with the water court, and there they would go again. Now, it would be a 2025 date, 50 years junior to what was originally there, but people are filing water rights this junior even now.
And there's sure a lot of horse trading going on with water rights in Colorado, aren't there?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Thank you, Bill Kite, for mentioning membership in SVPA, and do want to remind the listeners again that we're not a fundraising organization. Baseline membership in SVPA is $20 a year. What we're looking, and that's just kind of a token vesting into that membership. And what we really want in that membership, as you touched on, is names and motivated, passionate people that we can call on to write their representatives or give a heads up to. It's not as if we have our annual meeting is really our only event. We did just have a celebratory party at Propaganda Pie for the Philoha Meadows access, of which Savepa was very much involved with.
I missed it again this year. Darn it.
Well, the annual meeting's not till the Sunday at the end of August.
Oh, okay. So I haven't missed it.
This was an impromptu party when it was finally official that Pitkin County took back possession of that access gate for people to be able to walk from the gate into Philoha Meadows. You can't drive into there, which I think is a good thing, but right. You can now go through a swing gate at that residential gate to go into Philoha Meadows during daytime hours. Yeah.
So that, yeah, that's keeping
Philoha Meadows
open for public access is really important, isn't it?
Yeah, but also at the same time, under the guise of Pitkin County Open Space, is still protecting the more than human there. It's limited hours.
Right.
The only people that are going in there at night is guided by Roaring Fork Conservancy for the Firefly occasional tours. So even though it is access, it's guarded access, which I think is a win-win for the human and the more than human.
Right. When you can work out a deal where everybody's protected like that, it's rare but very important.
Yeah.
For sure.
And in terms of keeping your eye on things that rear back up again, another thing front and center that has come up over the past couple months is a proposed new 190-foot cell phone tower pretty much on Ragged Mountain Road. If people are familiar with the top of McClure Pass, the public can drive approximately 2 miles in the summertime. You arrive at a locked gate that still is public access but not vehicle access without permit. And about a mile after that lock gate, before you get to Ragged Mountain Ranch or Ragged Mountain Subdivision, is a Snowtell site, actually. And that's approximately where that cell phone tower is being proposed. And I want to be clear that Savepa is keeping their eye on this and would prefer not to see that happen, mostly bringing it full circle on eye on the ball. It would involve trenching and and therefore disturbing the old McClure Pass Road for the power and the cabling. And that's just now been pretty much pounded into a really nice single-track trail
right.
That only would have been improved any further for the new bike path thing, and that is only supposed to be 3 foot wide crusher fines. But this trenching and infrastructure up to a cell phone tower, plus the cell phone tower itself, feels intrusive.
Well, they could always make one of those pretty trees, you know. They're so nice.
Yuck.
That looks like a tree, like heck, it looks like a tree. But
yeah.
Now let's get straight here, because when I'm coming up from Carbondale and I passed the turn for Marble on the left, and I'm going up the pass, there's two roads that are available for public access. The one I really like is on the right, and I've gone up there before, and you park down below there, but I've been up there in the winter. I had one of the best trips I had, winter camping. I woke up in the morning. I was in a sleeping bag, and I felt like something was there, and I was on my side, and I opened my eyes, and there was a fox about 12 feet away going, you know how a dog does, put their head to the left and the right, looking at, what is that in my way?
Yeah.
And you can have some great experiences there along the Ragged Mountain area there.
Yeah.
So, but the other road you're talking about is the one on the left, right when you get to the top of the pass. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, because that's a popular area in there too.
Yeah, very popular.
A lot of people like that.
But, and there's a decent amount of houses in that Ragged Mountain Ranch. In terms of access, kind of hut-like, but in terms of improvement, some of them are very house-like, actually.
They are, aren't they? Yeah, yeah. I've seen that before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the next few minutes we have, what projects do you think you can see on the horizon that people can join to help with? Because I'm telling you, that party is a good party. I'm glad I didn't miss it. I thought I'd missed it. So it's worth paying $20 to join just to go to that annual party.
That's right.
So.
well, in turn, that annual meeting which is a great social atmosphere as well, is the last Sunday in August, and it's going to once again for the third time be at the Raspberry Cafe, the old Raspberry Inn at Raspberry Ridge Cafe that's been rejuvenated the past couple years.
All right.
Yeah, shout out to Amber McCahill that runs that. She's on Marble Town Council, and she hosts us. But she also is a great friend of SEVEPA in terms of keeping us apprised and working in both directions for SEVEPA initiatives. But the cell phone tower is something that we're definitely keeping our eye on. Also, most recently, a hard eye on the development of so-called Treasure Mountain Resort in Crystal.
Right.
There, you can find our quarterly newsletter compiled by Susie Ortiz Meredith for that has really elevated that newsletter on SEVEPA.org, and read a really good article by one of our young board members and land planners, Jay Engstrom, about we were kind of the default most recent no on Gunnison County wanting feedback on the most recent phasing of that, which involves a large pole barn, et cetera. Jay's point mainly in that article is we would rather see an entire master plan reviewed and approved or not, rather than scope creep on a phase-by-phase basis.
And there you have it, folks. Thank you so much, Bill and Greg, for being with us. You've been listening to For Land's Sake, KDNK Public Affairs Program, second Monday of the month. So we're coming up in August as well. Until then, whatever you do to Mother Nature, do it for land's sake.